I'm Emily Forstner with Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. It's the third Tuesday of the month, and this is Inside the School District. With me today is Superintendent Dr. Randy Traney. So, hello, Dr. Traney. Happy fall equinox. Tell me something good.
Well, here's something good. I believe that we're saying the next 3 to 4 weeks we're going to be able to start adding back. This is brand new news to me just in the last 20 minutes. So I'm hopeful that we're going to start seeing a reduction in the amount of bus cancellations.
Well, tell me, how many more buses? What are you thinking? Like, more details. This is exciting news.
The plan still is to get back to full service. You know, there's lots of intervening factors here. People have to take and pass the test. But it looks like there's enough people in the pipeline that hopefully in the next 3 to 4 weeks, we'll be able to go back to one. You know, right now we're on two cancellations a week from a family's perspective. We hope to move take a one step towards being totally done, so everybody just had one cancellation a week. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be our first stepping stone to getting back to fully normal.
And we hope for that by the end of the quarter, like mid-October?
Mid-October, we're trying to set a date, you know, like under promise and over deliver. So in talking with Durham, we've penciled out this date of the middle of the month, October 15th. And as long as it, you know, as long as everything goes the way we hope it will, we hope that that's what will happen.
So what changed in that? I know the state was going to relax some of their requirements for, you know, training and stuff. What was the cause for this shift?
Yeah, what was happening was because of a requirement at the state level where each trainer could only instruct two people at a time, and there were five trainers available, the most they could teach was 10 at a time, and it takes 3 to 4 weeks per group. So they relaxed that they could teach more. There were plenty of people in the pipeline, so now they can teach more at a time. And then that's, you know, the proof will be in the pudding as to, you know, can the people get through the training in 3 to 4 weeks, and will they actually pass the test at the end? So we make sure that they're safe, qualified drivers before we put them out on the roads.
One of the results of the bus shortage, it's nationwide, but one of the reasons in Alaska is that flat funding for several years in a row, almost a decade now. Is there any hope that that may be changing? Do you have a sense that the representatives understand that they're part of the problem?
Well, I, you know, last year when I talked to our Valley delegation, you know, there was certainly interest in it. As a matter of fact, this morning we had a meeting with administration between the borough assembly and the district. And I brought that up with the borough assembly, like, this would be great if we could get the assembly to make this one of their talking points. And so I think the borough manager is going to float that idea to the assembly. You know, there's certainly, like you said, this is a nationwide problem, but it's also an Alaska problem. And when you don't have funding that has increased for 8 years, it makes it hard to afford the kind of salaries that are going to attract enough people to this job in general across the state. So I think if we can have this as a budget priority for both the school board and then hopefully the borough assembly, that will give our Valley delegation, you know, more to work with. They see that this is a priority for multiple organizations. I can tell you that we spend $3 million of our general fund money above and beyond what we get from the state for transportation. So, and that number has grown over the years because the state isn't putting any more money into the system.
So that is a good thing. Getting our kids to school on a reliable and regular basis is a good thing. I've got another question for you. Mm-hmm. Of all the things that goes on in a district right now for you, what's keeping you up at night?
What's keeping me up at night? You know, it's almost always, you know, the thing that I think matters the most that keeps me up is just general achievement levels. Like, I was just looking just now, I was down in the Office of Instruction, and we were looking at math achievement levels and where, you know, the path that we have our students on. We're looking at secondary data, but this really starts at a younger age. So just like in huge generalities, we have about half as many kids in Algebra 1 in eighth grade as the rest of the country in our very best school. When I look at school, you know, and then when I look at some of our other schools, we're like way worse than that. So we really have like a math achievement level deficit that's pretty, frankly, pretty huge. We've been making great progress on it. So this, you know, I have this analogy I've been using this year as coach and cheerleader. So the coach says, hey, we're, you know, in our very best middle school in the whole district, we're only half of the national average. That's not good enough. And that's me being the coach. On the other hand, we've increased our number of students enrolled in Algebra 1 or higher in middle school dramatically in the last 2 years. So we are making progress on it. I get to be a cheerleader or a fan, but I also have to keep being the coach that we definitely have lots of room to improve. And I think that's one of the hardest things for not students. They're very, very flexible, but for the adults involved in the system, like we've been making lots of changes. And then the coach, me, has to say, yes, and we need to keep making changes because I just frankly believe that our kids are just as capable as all the other kids in the country, and being half as good as the rest of the country just isn't good enough. So we have to keep changing, and change is a really hard progress. So a really hard thing to embrace, not progress. We need to try to create this culture of change where we're constantly looking at student achievement and changing what we do as adults so students do better. Those are the big, huge ideas that keep me up at night.
I think the words you used once, we don't need to be change managers. We need to be change agents.
Yep.
So
yep.
The PLC Mondays, are they going to make this shift for you there? Are they going to let you sleep? Or are they keeping you up?
Well, you know, sometimes most of the time when I don't sleep, it's because I'm excited about something. I'm thinking about this achievement issue, and PLC Mondays is like, it's the vehicle. It's one of the avenues for actually changing student achievement. I also have, you know, just like I have faith in that our students are just as good as the rest of the students in the country, I have that very exact same faith for all of our employees. You know, after spending 2 years looking at how our teachers work and how our administration works, this isn't from a lack of effort. For one reason, it's maybe a lack of the resource of time, and PLC gives them this systemic time and focus where they can talk about student achievement every single Monday. And when we go to the PLC meetings, because, you know, we are covering, I don't know, over half of the schools every Monday get somebody from the district office in there learning with them and their PLCs. What we see are, you know, staff just really engaged and starting to get into, like, we spent the first month or so, half of this quarter, teaching people what a PLC is. And now they're starting to engage in the actual PLC process where they're taking data like the data that I shared with you. And then they can say, okay, what do we want the kids to know? So take a Colony Middle School. They can look at their achievement data in Algebra 1. And they can say, okay, we're half of the national average. What do we want kids to know? Well, we want them to know these standards for Algebra 1, how are we going to know that they know it or not? Well, we have the data. And now what are we going to do about it? And I think that's been the piece missing in the past, or at least one of the pieces that made us have such a dramatic achievement deficit compared to the rest of the country.
This is Big Cabbage Radio, and I'm talking with Superintendent Dr. Traney about news inside the district. So, Dr. Traney, what are you going to do if the kids don't know it or do know it? That's in your four C's, right?
Yeah, that's also the so at the secondary level, I'll give Wasilla High. They have developed a flexible schedule for their students that are exactly questions 3 and 4 for the PLCs. What are they going to, you know, what are we going to do with them when they know it? What are we going to do with them when they don't know it? And they're building their whole 4C schedule around those two questions, you know, and then scheduling students, particularly the ones that don't know it, getting them in the course or into the subject area where they've clear, where they demonstrated they don't know it, and addressing the problem right then. And then hopefully, you know, this takes many years for it to play out because we're trying to change the entire system. We're going to move that graduation rate from, you know, a very respectable graduation rate that's grown dramatically over the last decade, but still at 86, 85, 87%, that's not good enough. We're addressing that last 10, 15% right now in real time with students because we're catching them on a week-by-week basis. Okay, this kid doesn't know this week. Now I'm going to flex their schedule in the 4Cs in the coming weeks and address those shortfalls like in real time rather than waiting till the end of the semester when the kid now has an F and now we have to, right? Now you're behind the ball instead of in front of it.
So some of your measurements, like how many students are in Algebra 1 at the right pace, you know, like you're not in Algebra 1 by the time you're a junior, you're in Algebra 1 so that you have more access to other math classes upper level as you go on. You don't want to end with Algebra 1. That's one measurement. Another measurement is graduation rate. Another measurement is your D's and F's, you know, how many kids are actually passing courses on the right schedule. The other thing within PLC is an increased teacher efficacy. How do you measure that?
Yep. That's one of those things where, you know, there's no teacher efficacy rating scale that I know of where all the school districts across the country all take a test or some, you know, something on this same time to compare against. So it's going to be far more anecdotal data. But I can just tell you from my observations, my own personal observations on the schools that I've been lucky enough to sit in on PLC Monday, you can feel this teacher efficacy thing starting to take hold. People are talking about, which we want to associate with PLCs, they're talking about the data, they're talking about people, not what they taught, that's certainly important, but what the students learned. Like, yes, I taught it, but did they learn it? Okay, they didn't learn it. What are we going to do differently? That's the teacher efficacy, because when you switch your vocabulary from what did they learn as opposed to what I taught, hidden in that message to yourself is that I believe they all can learn it. And the fact that they haven't learned it, oh, that's on me as the educator. I believe in them. I have this teacher efficacy that all students can learn. And that's a big vocabulary change in a person's mind.
Yes, it is. And
I hear that. Like, we all, like, after my new routine Monday morning is when I get back, I go talk to all the other people. I like, where did you go? What did you see? What's the feeling? And that feedback I'm getting from all of these district office personnel who are going to the district or going to each of the schools within our district is one of like hope and optimism because everybody can hear and feel teachers starting to use this language that represents like collective efficacy for students.
Teacher efficacy is hard to measure, but research suggests that if you can improve the teacher efficacy, then all things work out. It moves uphill. It that is your driver, is that teacher efficacy.
It's one of the biggest predictors, one of the biggest things that we can do as educators that actually promote student achievement is believe that all of them can do it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what data points you can share with staff so that they can celebrate their increased efficacy. What might that be?
Boy. You know, some of it, I hadn't really thought of it, so this is me on the fly. like some of it I've been sharing now that you put it in this context. It's like our enrollment in AP. Let me take like Reddington, for example. They have dramatically, I mean, so dramatically shifted the number of students that they have in these classes that used to be reserved for only, you know, the very best and the brightest, you know, the great big king salmon that are swimming around each school. Only these special kids got to be in this class. Teacher efficacy, if you believe they all can do it, then wouldn't they all be in these better classes? And they are making that shift. You don't see, you know, nearly as many fundamental classes. And certainly there are some kids where a fundamentals class is valid. But frankly, our numbers across the district in those classes are way too high. And then you can look at a Reddington where that teacher efficacy shift is happening and has been happening for a while. And they are leading the charge in getting more and more kids enrolled in these classes because collectively they're like, yeah, we believe they can do it. We believe they all can learn in these more advanced classes. So that's some data I've been sharing far and wide. I've just never put it into the you know, perspective of this is really a measure of teacher efficacy too, because the teachers believe the kids can do it.
Is that transferring? Is Reddington's Algebra 1 increasing for the younger kids in 9th and 8th grade?
You know, I don't have it stuck in my head. I actually have the data here. I could look very quickly and see. I'm not going to have any historical data, so
yeah.
I wouldn't be able to answer right now. But it's certainly an interesting question.
Yeah, to see if if those two pieces correspond with each other.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the next layer here. I've been talking about secondary, and for this one example that I led with today about math enrollment, this isn't a secondary only problem, right? Like the kids come to the middle school from elementary school, so we have to push this conversation down to our elementary schools as well. Like it's not only a secondary problem that we're like less than half of the national average for enrollment in Algebra 1. This starts much earlier than that.
Yes, it does. And there's been quite a bit of emphasis in bringing math PD into the elementaries, and that's continuing this year, isn't it?
Yep. You know, last year I had so much feedback about the PD we gave around the new math curriculum. I had multiple teachers, multiple administrators, people, you know, that, you know, I'm not friends with, you know, I don't see them on a regular basis, but come out of their way to find me and say, this is the best PD we've ever had around math achievement. So I do feel like we're making efforts at elementary, and I think it will bear fruit. It does take a long time for systemic change to actually start showing up, right? Like last year's kindergartners who, you know, the first kids to have the new curriculum, and those teachers who got the PD last year, we aren't going to see them hit that middle school, hit secondary for a while, where we get to start comparing them up, you know, across the nation with other ages, with other schools.
Yeah.
So I feel like systemic change at the elementary level to like fix the pipeline problem. And at the same time, right now, we have all of these kids who are currently in middle school and currently in high school, and we need to address. You know, we need to address the problems that we can address with them right now. We can't say, well, it didn't happen when you were in kindergarten, so you're stuck in the system. And so, like, to circle back, like, Reddington has dramatically increased the number of students in these upper division classes just because they believe in them. They're like, yep, it doesn't matter that our system before didn't get you ready. We're taking you where you're at right now, and we're going to give you the supports to be successful in these classes.
Well, these are really exciting. It would keep me up at night. We just, there is good stuff. We're about ready to run out of time, and there's two more things. Ed, could you share with listeners about the ELA curriculum and materials? And because that is coming up for a review. So we've spent some time on math, but ELA, that's your English and Language Arts. Where and what and how for listeners on that?
So I'm going to look at Jillian to see if she has a website memorized. She does, so I'll have her jump in here in a minute. But what we've done is we've extended the time period for parent input for basically a month. And we've tried to make it as user-friendly as possible. Most, if not all, of the materials are available online, like in their entirety, for people to look at. You can call and make an appointment and come in and see the materials whenever you want during office hours. And then we've also added, I believe there's two dates where we have at in the evening opportunities for people to come in and view. Like, you know, some people want to actually hold the book in their hand, mm-hmm. right? They don't looking at it online. So we've tried to extend everything for a full month, give plenty of opportunity for families and parents to come in and look at the materials. And that's obviously going to delay our adoption. The intent, though, will be that when we have a new school board, we were trying to get this done before mm-hmm. the election. We're going to, you know, we have five seats up.
Right.
So there's going to be a change. By extending this, you know, everything has a plus and minus. We get more parent feedback, but the current board won't vote on it. It will be the new board, which will be a heavy ask for, you know, potentially, I guess, four brand new school board members. One of our existing board members, there's nobody running against them, so we presume that that person is going to win. So it's a heavy ask for brand new school board members. Like when they first come on, they're gonna need to, you know, mm-hmm. hear feedback has been from parents, staff, teachers, et cetera, and then make a decision about going forward with the new curriculum. We do need to get it ordered, you know, like January, February, in order to get it here in time for next year.
Will this include a reading list that had some, that was a little snafu a couple of years ago?
You know, I'm not sure how detailed the reading list is in the secondary curriculum. I'll have to get back with you. I don't know. I don't know if it has every single text that's involved in the reading list. I'll ask an instruction and we'll get that answer.
But for listeners, the materials are for not for the elective courses. The materials are for English 1, English 2, and the middle school language arts and the elementary reading program.
Yep.
So
yep.
it doesn't go yep. into the weeds. This is more of those required courses.
Yep, it's more of the required courses.
Yeah. Well, our time is out. It's always I always enjoy talking with you. Is there anything else you'd like to leave with listeners on this nice rainy day?
You know, I can't thank parents enough for, you know, the disruption that I know that the busing situation has caused for families across the valley. I just want people to know that we are really working hard. It was a game changer. I guess another thanks is going to go out to Deed for being so flexible so we can get our buses back up to full capacity way sooner than it was looking if that rule had stayed up. I know that we had legislative members from the Valley involved. There was some conversation with the governor's office. So there were lots of folks who were instrumental, but really it came down to the staff at Deed that worked with us to make sure that we can get drivers fully up and operational in a much quicker timeline than we were looking at before.
Well, thank you, Dr. Traney, and I hope you sleep well.
Okay, me too. Thank you.
Okay. You've been listening to Emily Forstner on Big Cabbage Radio with Inside the District. Tune in on October 18th for the next Inside the District. Until then, stay well out there.
You've been listening to Inside the School District, a weekly discussion providing you with information about what's happening in the Mat-Su schools. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, the station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.